Thanks for tuning in to your Day Off Podcast, hosted by your boys, Corey and Tony.
I think by the end of today, I might have another best friend.
They're committed to making you fall in love with the hair industry, one podcast at a time.
You're going to grab a lot of information.
Yeah,
you're going to learn a lot.
Presented by Hairdistry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it.
Your Day Off Podcast will begin after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, welcome to your day off. My name is Corey. Of course, sitting with my best friend, Tony. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, brother?
Dude, I'm so excited. So where are we at? 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th. We're 4 days away from Pressy Poe and Friends, our fourth annual Pressy Poe and Friends.
Oh, man. Dude, I just want to give a quick shout out to Temple in Frederick, Maryland.
Aaron and Frederick Reiser, thank you so much. In Frederick, Maryland, which is where the event's going to be held.
Allowing us to find ourselves in the event space, because without you guys, none of this, you know, would be here right now.
Dude, you can start making me cry before we even get started.
Sorry.
I mean, yes, a heartfelt, like, just thank you. They've been incredible. And like you said, like, I'm going to start to cry. Hold on. Whew. Like, they have made it possible for us to, like, fulfill our dreams, and not even fulfill our dreams, because I think actually fulfilling dreams is easier than starting your dreams, you know. So they were able to kind of, like, they helped us, like, just start the walk, just start the pathway to fulfilling our dreams.
1000%, brother. Well said. And our title sponsor, Babeless, we want to just give you a lot of love and thank you so much for trusting us and allowing us to do what we do and backing us up.
Yeah. Babeless, thank you so much. They're bringing in all their artists. And again, they have, like, you know, for my whatever, it the best artist in the world. I also want to talk about what I'm really excited about is our friend Oliver Zach, who owns Mad Rabbit Tattoo Cream. And what they're doing is they are doing actually an incredible thing for everybody that comes to the show. You can sign up, and they're going to fly one person from our show to Los Angeles, put them up for the weekend, and you're going to go to the Mad Rabbit headquarters, which is filled with the best tattoo artist in the world, and you're going to sit down for $1,000 tattoo session. And that's all Mad Rabbit is covering that entire weekend, which I'm blown away about. I'm going to beg Oliver Zach that I can go out as a chaperone.
Yeah, I know. I was like, so bummed that we can't apply, because that's something that...
I'm going to apply, but if I win, I guess I'm going to have to turn it down, because that would look sketchy as heck.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't apply. But,
right?
Again, Marlo Beauty. And yeah, thank you guys for, again, you know, just believing in what we're doing and what we're putting on.
Yeah.
You know? Booksy.
Yes, Booksy. Thank you so much, Booksy. They're also doing a big giveaway. You're going to sign up for it. And they were really smart, because they were like, you know, we don't want to send the giveaway to the place, because then if people are flying in, then they got to fly out with it. So what we're going to do is we're just going to ship it to your house. So the winner, they're going to ship. We have three winners for the weekend, but they're going to ship these gift bags. I see these big, like, Easter baskets with Easter just passed. Just
amazing swag.
With amazing swag, exactly.
And Malibu Sea.
Malibu Sea, again, the Malibu Sea. I love a Malibu Sea, but I also, like, I'm scared of Malibu Sea, because whenever I need Malibu Sea, shit's gone wrong.
Right.
You know, like Malibu Sea is like, uh-oh.
Or just use Malibu Sea as a preventive so it won't go wrong.
You know what? Fair enough. But in my head, like, whenever, like, I'm, like, reaching for the Malibu Sea, that means that, you know, something's going crazy in my life.
Yeah. And then, last but not least, who's going to make everybody happy the night of the show is Ruzel, because they're sponsoring the bar and
yes,
giving you the drinks and hors d'oeuvres and make sure everybody stays happy and just in the moment. And thank you guys so much for being a part of this.
Yes, completely. And Saturday night is, you know, for Roots is going to be there. So every time that you have a drink, or every time you have an hors d'oeuvre, make sure to raise that glass and give them a little toast.
On that note,
now that we're talking about alcoholism and stuff. So Listen, this is the month of April. The month of April is Mental Health Month. And we did a podcast last week, and we touched on this a little bit about what it's like to be a neurodivergent hairstylist. And this week or today, we're talking to our new friend Denise Marshall, and she's a psychotherapist. Or I actually don't want to give out too much because I want her to kind of like tell us her journey and how she found this space. But you know, I think it's important that we keep having these conversations. Last October, we did some mental health stuff. And the more and more certainly that you're on social, and the more and more that you're communicating with the industry as a whole, which we have the opportunity to do, you see that these conversations are really important. And I think that we could do one every week for a year. I'm not suggesting we're going to do that, but I think it's really important because whatever Denise says today, maybe she reaches the one person that needed to hear it, or the one person that needed to use it. And I think it's really important that we just keep having these conversations.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head when you said we need to continue to talk about it, because so much in the past, I think we've not talked about it. You just held it in or not said anything, or you didn't, you know what I mean? I think, the more we talk about it, the more that people can just really kind of see for themselves that, you know, whether you need help or not, it just, you know, gives you hope.
Yeah, for sure. Should we get in?
Yeah.
My new friend, Miss Denise Marshall, welcome to your day off.
Hello. It is my day off, actually, kind of. So I'm so happy to be here. And I love that you both are talking about mental health awareness and bringing that to light. And also, you mentioned something at the end about, you know, kind of in jest joking about alcoholism. I'm also an advanced alcohol and drug counselor. So that is also something near and dear to my heart. But so I'll give you just a quick little background on myself. So I actually, from the age of 7, knew I wanted to be a hairstylist. So I have nearly 30 years of salon experience. I went to cosmetology school while I was in high school. I knew I wanted to go to college, and that would be the only way I could pay for it. When I graduated from college, I realized I was making more money than my professors. So I thought, you know, I'm having fun and doing all of that. So I actually stayed in the industry for a very long time. I've been a manager for the Aveda Institute. I've been an educator for Paul Mitchell. I've been a color educator for L'Oreal. I have been an independent stylist. I've been a commissioned stylist. I actually lived in the Middle East for 10 years where I also did hair. So this career has served me so well. And what I kind of realized is I later, you know, I did get my undergrad in psychology and criminology. And then I later went to get my master's in clinical mental health counseling. And I do have a private practice now that I work with addiction, trauma, and OCD. And what I started realizing in my clinical practice, well, let me back up a little bit. I knew from also in cosmetology school that someday after I got a lot of experience that I wanted to do something to kind of give back to the salon industry. And what I noticed is so many stylists leave this field so early and they don't realize all the potential. And I think a lot of it, what the kind of light bulb moment for me was when people were coming in my clinical practice and I was hearing some of the same issues that I was hearing back in the salon and with my coworkers and the things that they were dealing with, and kind of started putting the pieces of the puzzle together of how I can come back now and support hairstylists and salon professionals, massage therapists, nail technicians. The thing is, there's so much absorption of emotion in the field, or absorbing, I don't know if that's the right word, but regardless, when you look at hairstylists, salon professionals, most stylists are extremely empathic people by nature. And with empathy, so empathy, the difference between sympathy and empathy is, sympathy is I can know that your dog died, therefore you would feel upset. But as a person with empathy, you can actually feel that they're upset. So that's the difference. And most salon professionals, I would say, are kind of empaths by nature. And because of that, not only are you hearing the stories, you're physically absorbing it, you know, physically, emotionally, and in every other way. And so I kind of wanted to bring some kind of education to definitely still support those close salon relationships that are expected. You know, people come to hairstylists and they view it as their own therapy. And so there's an expectation within the salon industry, barbering, all of that field, where that is the expectation for a lot of people to come in and kind of dump on the hairstylist, which they feel great when they leave. But sometimes the hairstylist feels like they're leaving with all of this emotion and all of this baggage, really. And I think that's a big reason why a lot of the people leave this industry. So that's kind of where my angle came from. And I'm really excited to be back in the salon world. I've missed it tremendously. I've been out for, I've had my practice for, I've been out for about 13 years of that field. So I did start very young, if you're doing the math of my age. But regardless, I just wanted to bring that back to you. So I don't know if you have any questions about any of that.
A couple things. And one, yeah. like we've had these conversations, we talked about it before. We've had these conversations before of like trauma dumping, you know, like when our clients come in and they dump, you know, their traumas on us. And, you know, I feel a little bit like a sociopath because like, I thought I was empathetic to them and I kind of understand what they're going through. Maybe to your point, maybe I'm more sympathetic to it, but I don't really feel like I take it home with me. Like I don't, like I'm able to kind of like shut that off and not like shut it off. Like I don't need it anymore. It just doesn't affect me into my next.
Because you are a sociopath, full hearted.
Probably, it sounds yeah. like it.
Let me just get out my DSM.
Exactly, but you know, and I don't, and again, I don't know what it is. I mean, like I'm very sympathetic in the moment and what you're going through. But you know, at the end of the day, I don't take it home with me. I just kind of leave it there. So, but that doesn't mean that people don't, and that's what the conversation is about, right? With that, and that's tough. I could see how this could be a really tough job, for people. I mean, luckily for us too, and maybe it's again where we are in our careers, but. You know, we might have the conversation, you know, once a day, but more likely once a week.
Yeah. But to that point though, you do have clients that when you see them on your book, that it weighs heavy on you because you know, maybe the conversation or maybe the negative connotations of the conversation that's about to happen.
That is so valid and so fair, you know, like maybe I don't leave with it, but I know it's coming. So there's the stress with that.
Right. Well, that's that sense of dread. So kind of what's happening is another interesting thing that happened to me when I was in cosmetology school. Now I was 17 years old, so there's no reason why I should have felt exhausted. Right. And when I first went on the floor, I would leave feeling like I had run a marathon and I didn't realize what was going on. So there were two things going on. One was I needed to develop this new kind of social muscle of interacting with people all day, but it was also the physical exchange of the energy exchange of physically touching someone all day. And that's a real thing. I don't know if people realize that. It took me a year. I didn't find this out until, you know, 20 years later, what was actually going on. So there is an energy exchange with people when they come in and they're kind of, like you said, you have that dread. You see that this person's coming in, you know, they're going to not only trauma dump, but a term that I think I've coined, I don't know if I have, but drama dumping as well. So you get all of it from them. And then subsequently what sometimes happens is the hairstylist or salon professional also drama dumps on the client. So I actually did a pretty big poll and found out the number one reason why a person doesn't go back to a stylist is not because of pricing, although that was kind of lower on the list, very low actually, wasn't because of skill or technique. It was because the stylist was oversharing with the client. And so one of the things that I kind of help support salon professionals with is learning how to build your life in a way that you don't need to rely so much on your salon environment, which is where we spend the majority of our time, but you're not relying on that for your social support, your emotional support, and all the rest of it. And with doing that, that's when you start, we do a lot of exercises and I teach a course and stuff, but we do a lot of exercises where we look at how well-rounded is your life so that you don't have to feel like you've got to rely on that person. And you also aren't so invested in their life because you're full in other ways. And maybe that's why, Corey, for you, that it doesn't drain you so much. Maybe your life is well balanced enough that you're not letting yourself get sucked in as much. That could be one of the reasons why you're kind of insulated from that. So it's looking at that. The other thing is getting really regulated. I see so much stuff on social media about firing your clients that aren't ideal for you. And I don't want to step on anyone's toes. And I think there's certainly times when, of course, you do need to put up a hard, rigid boundary and say, no, I can't, deal with this type of person. And that's okay. But I think when you're really well regulated yourself, you don't have that need to fire clients because you're not as impacted as much by their words and actions. So it's kind of really looking at all of that. And, I know when I very first started this program, I was getting a lot of questioning about, are you trying to get hairstylists to not be a place of sharing and connecting anymore? And certainly that's not my mission. My mission is more about how can I teach you to connect in a way that still protects yourself so that you don't leave this fantastic industry. And the ways to do that are doing all those things of looking at your life and doing some of the exercises of how are you living and what is my social support and am I relying too much on them and are they relying too much on me? So you can certainly have conversations where you can shift away and redirect and you can talk about more benign topics when it's getting too heavy for you. That's something that I think is really important. So then maybe you don't feel like you need to fire clients. Because if you look at, the general population, it's something like, this is a whole nother topic. I've talked about introverts, extroverts, and ambiverts, different personality types. And when you look at people who are ambiverts, which is a combination of introversion and extroversion, they're pretty direct and outspoken. And those are sometimes the people that we want to fire. But those are actually the majority of the population identify as ambiverts. So it's like 67% or something. So if you want to look at firing that many people, I just don't know if that supports your business the way it could be. So it's just getting yourself really grounded in your life. One of the things we do, I don't want to give away too much, but is, looking at, if you were to draw out your life in a pie chart and how many sections of your pie do you have? Do you just have work and your family and that's it? I mean, not that that's, that really is the bulk of most of our lives, right? But you've got to have many, many, many other pieces of the pie. We saw a lot of this in the pandemic when the salons were shut down and people were, 80% of their pie chart was filled with the salon life. And then they didn't really have any other pieces of the pie to fall on. And so that's when it comes really imbalanced and people get that over-reliance, so to speak. And with that, the absorption of the people's problems. And I'm wondering now, when I'm really putting all your pieces of your puzzle together, Corey, how you're not affected. And I'm guessing that you are pretty full in your life in other ways.
Well, so certainly now. Here's something that you brought up that kind of I had a little light bulb moment with, is that I'm going back to two conversations a little bit, but it's not the relationship with the person, but it's your relationship with the conversation that you're having with the people.
Yes.
For, I think this is a good analogy. Let me know if it's a terrible analogy, but I stopped watching any news because I wasn't mature enough to receive it and then to let it go. So because I wasn't mature enough to do it, and because like watching the news cycle ruined my whole day, that I'd go, call it like head in the sand, But I also know that certainly the election cycle is 4 years long, every 4 years, which means that equates to the rest of my life. And I don't have enough years left in my life to where I can worry about that 24 hours a day. So I've had to have the conversation with myself, like, I'm not mature enough to do this. So I'm just going to let this go and let, you know, the world kind of do that. So it's about having the relationship with the conversation more than it is with the person, and like your own relationship or your own, you know, relationship with that conversation. And I think it's really important that we look at what our relationships are and what our relationships, and not with people, but with like being, and what those relationships are and how much of a drag that is. And as far as the pie chart, here's my 2 cents about this. I know I'm taking over the conversation, but with your pie chart, but with the pie chart, like, I've always contended that you need a lot of pieces in your pie chart, because you're going to find purpose on the, you need to experience a lot of life before you find your purpose, or you need to experience a lot of life before you find purpose. And I think that if you're not doing a lot in your life, then you may live your whole life without any kind of purpose.
Oh, that's a really, really good analogy. I mean, a good observation. I think you're right. It's also, you know, looking at, you know, when you think about, I don't know, this is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which you may have heard of it. You know, he's a famous psychologist, and he did a lot of research around what makes people happy. And really, you can't evolve, to your point, to those higher levels of need until your basic needs are met. And then there's a whole, I think there's 8 categories or 5 categories that encompass a lot of different things, but you've got to work through those, and you can't work through those, to your point, without having a lot of different diverse experiences. And you sort of kind of struck a nerve, but brought something up with me. I actually stopped listening to news. I shouldn't admit this, and I should take a page out of your book that, maybe I'm not mature enough, but I stopped listening to the news, I think when I was about 19, a long time ago, and actually didn't have cable, still don't have cable for, you know, decades. And the reason why was I heard a story that was so devastating to me that it really ruined my whole day. I remember I cried in the salon a good majority of the day, and I just thought, not that I never listened to it. I pick up the main points, but I can't get sucked into it, absorbed to it, because it just wrecked me. I can't.
She can't watch the news, because then she dumps her trauma on other people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I think it's
what I'm doing now. Can you help me?
Yeah, I think a lot of people make that their life. You know what I mean? And hairdressing is a part of my life, but it's not my life. You know what I mean? I can go to work. I can do the task, and I'm thankful and I'm blessed that I'm good at it. I have a great clientele. I have a full clientele, but like Corey, it stays there. I don't take it home. My life is home. My life is friends. My life is so much more outside of the hair industry. Even though it's a part of my life, it's not my life.
Yeah. Tony, you bring up a good point about this idea of, I don't know if you use this word, but people getting kind of, there's a song that says you can become addicted to a certain kind of sadness. There's the lyrics of that song. And people do, it is addictive. And you get addicted to the drama of it and the excitement of it. And yeah, I said, look, I was very bad at this when I was early in my career. I loved it. I loved, you know, hearing all the stories, and then I was realizing, gosh, this is starting to take its toll on me. There's actually an interesting thing about talking about empathy and compassion. So compassion fatigue is a term that a lot of, is pretty popular in the salon world, probably the salon world too, but in the therapy world. And it kind of became really to the forefront after 9/11, actually. So after 9/11, they were using therapy dogs to, you know, go in and console people where people were gathering, you know, that were grieving people or looking for people and all of that. And because there was such a need, they were having them work several, like 8 or 10 hours, whatever it was. And after they were off their shift, they found a lot of those dogs were becoming really physically ill. They did all the lab work, the x-rays, all that couldn't find anything wrong. They finally realized it's because they were absorbing so much emotional pain. And after that, they put in guidelines that crisis therapy dogs are only allowed to work, I think, for 2 hours at a time. I have a colleague who is a crisis therapist. She shows up on, you know, kind of really bad scenes. And she was at something and she said, like clockwork, it was almost like the minute the clock struck 12, the dogs were rotated out and new dogs were brought in after that 2 hours. So, you know, not to say that we're dogs, but it stands to reason that we are going to absorb people's pain. And with it, and then this is really getting convoluted, but you've got to look at your past.
It's amazing that, like, even the dogs can kind of feel that trauma. Like, I would have never in a million years guessed that the dogs would be, like, empathetic. I don't know where I'm going, empathetic or sympathetic, or that they would actually absorb our energy. You would think they would absorb it and just let it go, because, you know, they seem to be very much animals of the moment, you know, not necessarily, like, past.
But hasn't there been, like, it's been proven that they can sense if you're sick or if you're not feeling well. There's a certain thing with dogs that they can just sense those things.
I guess I just never thought, like, emotionally, but, you know, I mean, if you have a dog, you understand that they're, like, emotional beings. I don't know what I'm saying, but that they keep it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, well, what she was saying, like, they, you know, had a room full of people and the dogs would naturally just go to the people that really needed it the most. She said it was amazing. So I don't know what they're picking up on. If it's, you know, I think there's been speculation that it's like pheromones or stress hormones in your body that they pick up on. You know, certainly there's the dogs that can predict seizures, which is fascinating to me. Have you seen that? Like, they go lay on their owners before they have a seizure. I just think that's amazing. So, you know, it does stand to reason that we're picking up on that too with people.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So
kind of take me back to, like, your classes and your conversations, or, you know, your workshops. Like, what are you teaching the professional about? But it sounds like to me too, and let me back up, like, we've had this conversation, like I said, a few times, but it seems like you're pointing the fingers to yourself and what can I do to have a more fulfilled life so these things don't impact my life the most. And certainly in my time on earth, I've had to have that relationship and those conversations. Like, for all of my 20s and 30s, I was pointing the fingers at other people saying, like, they're responsible for me. But at some point I had to, like, you know, look at myself and point the finger to me and go, well, what's my relationship with why is this driving me crazy when it's not really not their responsibility to make me happy?
Yeah. So we do a couple of different things. There's, you know, a couple of different avenues. One is, you know, we really look at, you know, boundaries and how do you redirect a conversation when it's becoming too much? How do you do all the things to ensure that you don't have the need to use the salon as your therapy chair, which I am very guilty of. Certainly in my 20s, I was really, you know, if you found any of my old clients, they would, you know, tell you it was horrible. And I probably owe them all an apology and a payment, actually. But regardless, so that's one of the things we look at. And we also look at, you know, just in general relationships and we start looking, really exploring in your own past, each individual person's past, and how that's showing up today that might be causing you problems in your day-to-day interactions. And certainly that translates over to home as well, because I think we'd all agree our home life affects our work life and our work life affects our home life. So when you're really aware and start getting insight into, you know, something happens in the salon that maybe subconsciously, which we start talking about and accessing, is, well, is this actually what's happening now? Or does this remind me of something that happened when I was a disempowered kid and had nothing that I was able to do about it? So we really start teasing that out. And that's the thing that I think most excited about of getting back into this and bringing this information. I mean, certainly it's not like The classes aren't exactly therapy because obviously, you know, that'd be a different session, but it's getting some really good insight in a, through a therapeutic lens that's all evidence-based, based in psychology and, you know, evidence-based practices that, that I use in my private practice to help people start learning more about themselves and how it's impacting their day-to-day and how it's impacting their relationships.
We need this, like, in every school, in every cosmetology school, you know what I mean? Because we don't learn about what's about to hit you, you know what I mean? So I love the to be able to have this conversation while you're in school to help equip you and prepare you for your journey.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my path would have been so much easier had I known this, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Just it's, you know, it's really imperative. And to your point, it's right. You know, you're right that we don't get prepared. Just like I didn't know why am I so tired at age 17 from, you know, standing all day. It wasn't from the standing. It was from listening to people and touching people and, you know, giving so much and not knowing what I was giving, how to give it, or why I was even giving it. You know, it's, it's a beautiful business though.
I would argue though, that if we had it in hair school, we wouldn't have listened anyways.
Well, you're
you know, I mean, that's also part of the experience of, you know, oh, those were wise lessons. I just didn't listen.
Right.
No?
Right.
Yeah. What do they say? Like, your parents get a lot smarter when you have kids.
You know? Yeah, well, that's true. You know? Although I do think there's more awareness about mental health now. So maybe, I don't know.
There more awareness or...
We're talking about it, I guess.
I mean, we're talking about it, but I get the sense that we're talking about it from a victim's perspective. Like I have this and, you know, I'm going to share that I have this, you know, whatever. And I don't know if it's good, bad. Listen, and like for to sound like the old guy in the room, which you are, is like, I grew up in a very strict leave it at a door policy. Right. Okay. And I don't necessarily think that that's a policy anymore. I don't think that, like, you know, whatever happened in your home life, whatever's happening in your mental health life, whatever happened, leave that at the door and come and do your job. And now it seems like our job is kind of like opening that door, and we don't leave anything at the door anymore. And like everything is open game to talk about and to discuss without. And again, this is like age perspective, without the perspective that if all your clients are bringing it in and you're bringing it in, that's a very, very, very exhausting existence.
No, you're right. Also, you bring up a good point about, oh, now I've lost my train of thought, something about
the door.
Kind of this oversharing idea. I know. So, so here's what happens with that is people... So you tell me something super intimate, and then I think, oh, well, then I have to either at least match that or even go deeper.
I've got an analogy for this, or certainly a practice. A practice is that if you ever ask me how I'm doing during the day, especially at work, I'm like, I'm awesome, right? And I choose that because immediately as a human being and as a human experience, we always like to out trauma yourself, or we always have to, oh, listen, I had a bad day. Well, listen, your day wasn't bad. Let me tell you about my day. You know what I mean? And like, and what a drive personal, this is just my own pet peeve, is like, hey Tony, how you doing? Oh, not bad. What the fuck does bad mean? Right? Like, I don't even know what that means, right? And by the way, Tony doesn't do that. I was just using him as like the example.
This whole
idea that we set our life up with a negative perspective, but then expect either a positive result from it, like you're expecting like this, or you expect like society or whoever to then come in and fix your problems when you can't even say I'm having a good day.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're kind of flavoring the menu before you even, you know, eat the meal, basically, right? You're already setting the precedent for how it's going to go. And just thinking about that, too, about this idea that you had said, I don't know if you said this, but I think you said it earlier about, you know, whether or not you're going to have a great day and how long, I would think you were talking about trauma dumping. How long, how many years, decades, days, weeks, hours, months are you going to spend letting your past story dictate and guide and direct and write the rest of your story? You know, and a lot of it is people don't know what their story is. They know what happened, maybe consciously or subconsciously, but until you really start looking at that, only then can you rewrite your future, or write your future rather. You know, you can't
change your story, you change your life.
Pardon?
Change your story, you change your life. And this is something that, again, I'm talking about my journey a lot, and I apologize to everybody, but you know, like for years, I had a lot of resentment and regret to my parents, mainly my dad, you know, and it wasn't until I had to change what, you know, here's what I know as a dad. And I think we can agree with this, you know, as a father, we're all just doing the best we can. And I have to assume that my father was doing the best that he can, and that, you know, with his upbringing, right? Because we always like to blame our parents for our upbringing, but we don't blame our parents for their upbringing.
Right.
Right. And the trauma that he grew up with, then I know that he gave it to me one step softer. Right. And it might have been hard for me, but he gave it to me one step softer because that's all that he knew. You know, yeah. and I'm hopeful that I gave my kids one step softer, you know, yeah. but then you run into what's the analogy or what's the thought about like weak, strong men create weak times create strong men, whatever that saying is, you know, and I think that, you know, it takes a little perspective to kind of see that. However, back to that, like my dad raised me one degree softer than what he was raised, you know, and what I've been able to do certainly now is to give empathy towards, or sympathy, empathy, whatever, towards what his upbringing must have been for my upbringing to be what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you've done a lot of work on yourself. I can hear from your words, which is great. But you're right. It's reframing, like you know, you kind of said change your story. And I think you meant really change your relationship to the story and your understanding of the story. And then you can start, like you said, recognize where were they coming from. I remember years and years ago, I went to a therapist actually, most therapists we have our own therapist. So shout out to mine. Hello.
Oh, no.
So also, thank you, Marianne. Regardless, I remember going to a therapist though a long time ago, and they wanted to do this like family tree. And I was like, what does it matter what my great uncle did? Like, I never went back to the person. Well, what I know now after my training is exactly what you're saying, is all of these family things are passed down from generation to generation. So, you know, if you have three generations of alcoholism, not only do you have that genetic predisposition, right? But you also have all that learned behavior, to your point, that's been passed down. So when you start looking at your past, you do have to dig deep and find out what was going on with my grandparents. What was going on, if you have access to it, what was going on with my great-grandparents even? Because that will filter down. We also know that there is actually a genetic component. They found this out through the Holocaust survivors. Second generation had generational trauma that was showing up. You know, all of these things are passed down, learned, you know, early memories that are, you know, we're kind of born with, like, you know, these people that are prodigies that, you know how to play the piano at, you know, age two. Where did that come from? So we're all connected in this really, you know, familial way that even if you didn't grow up with your biological family, there will be some genetic predispositioning behaviorally also.
That's such a deep thought to kind of think about. You know, I was you know, again, nail the head of whatever. I'm going to mess it up. But you know, like, you never think about you only think of your parents as your parents, but you never think of them as innocent children.
Right.
When you never think of them as like what trauma that they must have gone through or what they went through as children, which then dictated the behavior for which they for which they're the adult. But I also think that that can't be an excuse. For me, it has to be just a commitment to let the buck stop with you. And to be honest, that's my life motto.
But it's even like, back to what you said in the very beginning about, you know, I mean, when you said, oh, you used me as the example about, you know, Tony, how are you? I'm like, oh, not so great. Or
not bad.
You know, we are responsible for the words we speak, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I walk into the shop and Sierra, our front desk manager, she, you know, she says, Tony, I love when you come in because I walk in, she holds her fists out, we fist bump. She goes, how you doing? And every morning I say blessed. And she doesn't necessarily maybe hear that all day or hear that anytime during the day, but that I know that one moment she's looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm speaking as anybody, even my clients, you know, Tony, how are you? I'm blessed. You know what I mean? Whether I'm having a bad day or not, in the big scheme of things, I'm blessed. You know what I mean? So I carry that with me all the time. And you do. You impact people around you with your words.
You will impact yourself with your words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, what did you say when you said, oh, my day's okay, or whatever, but you're right. You're setting
not bad. Not bad. Not bad.
Or I could be better.
Not bad. Not bad. It could be better.
It could be worse.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's and that's why I always answer with like awesome or great, because I don't even know how often people hear that, you know, and they might think I'm full of S or whatever, but that's okay too. You know why? Because right. Sometimes that conversation is for me, you know, so
well, our brains don't know, right? Like they don't know the difference if it does whatever we tell it to, you know, if we tell it we're having a bad day, you know, we're gonna have a bad day.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you're telling yourself to have a bad day when it's not bad. Or you're telling yourself to have a not bad day. You know, I don't know what is not bad. I don't even know what not bad is. You know what I mean? Like, I guess it's a double negative. It could be, I don't know, whatever. It's too crazy. You know, the other thing too that we've talked about a few times on the podcast, certainly I'm guilty of talking about it, is that I'm a big believer that change isn't what's next. Change is getting rid of a belief system.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. It's becoming, I think you kind of alluded to this, of coming, getting at peace with the way things happened, you know? You know, I don't want to, you know, disclose too much. Well, it's no secret. I got into the psychology field from a pretty significant trauma history, and, you know, which is kind of what I wanted to learn, like why people do what they do. And the changing the relationship with that is what now, you know, I used to feel like, oh, why did this happen? Poor me, this was awful. And it was awful. But now, believe it or not, I'm actually in a small percentage of me is happy in some way that if it was going to happen, that it happened to me. And the reason why is because I've been able to do something really good with it. And I've sat with so many people hearing their trauma I've worked with people in their 40s and 50s that tell me stuff for the first time that they've carried their whole life because they feel, you know, safe to do so. And so I feel like, yeah, I wish it wouldn't have happened, but in a way I'm glad that, like I said, that it did, so that I can get to do what I do.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is reframing your history. I mean, that's a bit of a stretch there, you know, but it's true. Like people, you know, I work with addiction a lot. And the number one thing that helps people work through addiction, not the number one thing, but one of the big things to sustain abstinence is when you're able to give back and help someone else through their journey. And when you have purpose and you're able to find a reason for, you know, a beautiful thing that can come out of a very horrible thing that happened, you know, we see a lot with addiction and families falling apart and everything that comes with that. And as a side note, sorry, I'm going to go off a little bit of a tangent, so you feel free to edit it out. But, you know, there's a lot of posts that I see about, you know, it's something like 20% of, you know, hairstylists suffer from anxiety. Well, that's really within line with the general population, is 20 to 23%, roughly, depending on what study you're looking at. It is the same as the general population, but the difference is that not only do hairstylists suffer from anxiety to that in those numbers, but they're also taking on all the other anxiety and everything from their clients. So we see that. We also see there is a, I don't know the numbers here, and this isn't based in research, it's just my own observation. I do think there is a slightly higher rate of addiction in our field. And I think part of that is through the anxiety of, you know, there's a lot of trauma also in our field. And, you know, that's going off on me.
Well, I mean, I think Robert Cromine says it best, like, we're the industry of misfits, or we are a industry of misfits. And I think the reason that we are misfits is because a lot of us are lost to what a traditional education path would look like, or what a traditional path would look like, you know? So I think a lot of us, like, we end up here as opposed to, you know, being here, if that makes any sense at all. I don't know. But, you know, it's like, you know, like, even just last week in the conversation, she was saying that, that it certainly in England is like, oh, hairdressing is something that you try out if you have nothing else going on, you know? So, you know, if that's kind of like the basis, you know, if that's the way she feels in England, I don't know where it's going with that, but I think that is true, right? Like, if we are the industry of misfits, we're also, you know, there's never been a salon that I've worked at where there hasn't been an addiction issue, or there hasn't been an addiction, not issue, but, you know, we've also had a lot of recoveries too, but in order for there to be recoveries, there has to be the addictions in the first.
So what advice would you give for someone to be able to handle, or, you know, with the anxiety plus the drama dumping plus the addiction? I mean, like, what are some of your advice?
Yeah. So the kind of the insulators, if you will, right? Like, how do you, it's going back to the really what we kind of started the whole conversation with, is getting your life really well-rounded and balanced, and getting insight into yourself, learning how to regulate yourself, learning about how is your past playing out today? How are your past beliefs, interactions, stories, messaging that you heard? How is that affecting this exact moment in the salon, right this minute? You know, you have someone that comes in and you know, through some, well, going to another thing, but, you know, we store some people's subconscious body language in our amygdala in the back of the brain, which is the reptilian brain. And how are those, maybe someone comes in and you're not actively registering it, but once you get insight into yourself, you will, is, okay, that little body movement subconsciously reminded me of something that, you know, a caretaker did that was challenging for me, and I'm putting myself back in that exact feeling. Now I'm reacting to that client this way. So it's really getting insight and getting grounded and balanced in your life. Like, those are really kind of the three takeaways, I would say.
Do you help hairdressers or people in the industry to achieve that, or to be aware of that?
Yeah, so that's what we do in one of the courses, is looking at, we really spend some time reflecting. You know, I can't go too deep, obviously, because it's not, you know, I'm not going to open up a trauma wound in the middle of a, you know, training session. But we look at past messagings, particularly around interactions with relationships that could have been challenging, and how that could be playing out now. How is it affecting you in real time, both at home and your professional life? And then also looking at ways to interact differently, so that you support your kind of your bottom line, really. All these pieces of the puzzle all to go together. They're not separate, you know, separate. One is impacted by the other, and impacts all the others as well. So yes, we do go, I spend a lot of time on that, actually.
Have you, I know earlier you mentioned a little, I'm probably putting words in your mouth, but the way that I understood, you mentioned a little bit of like inner child work, and like, you know, who are we, you know, who is this inner child? And again, I'm going to speak for you, but whatever. So I know that, and this is the God's honest truth, is I did more healing in an hour of breath work than I ever could do when it comes to like inner child work. And I know you had a similar experience. There was more healing in an hour of breath work than, again, a decade of wondering what if, you know. It's I am such a big proponent of like breath work or these different modalities that frankly, when I was in my 20s, I would have been, oh, gobbledygook, you know.
Right. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're up. I stepped on you.
No. No, you're actually right. So you're definitely right because, so I don't know if you've heard, so there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score, and that's by Bessel van der Kolk. Actually, have the book right here somewhere. Yeah, here. If I touch it, it's all going to fall apart. But anyway, I actually did some training with him, and it goes into exactly what you're saying. Is all of these memories are stored in our bodies on a cellular level, and it affects not only our health but the way we feel every single minute of the day. And that's why, like, I know I've been in yoga classes before where I will just start crying for no reason. And it's all that cellular messaging that's been stored in our body that you're releasing through breath work or through movement. Because we know, you know, we're learning more and more psychology so early in its development in the overall scheme of things when you look at compared to physical medicine. But we're learning that they are really all connected, and doctors are finally coming on board too to understand that the majority, particularly for GI issues, a good percentage of them are actually more, you know, psychologically related. Not that it's in what someone's mind and they're making it up, but their emotions are affecting their physical well-being. So 95% of the serotonin that we produce is produced in our gut. So that stands to reason when you get, you know, that sick feeling of being nervous, it really is a sick feeling that you're having, you know, so it's all tied together. I mean, I could go on for like literally the whole day about some of this, but, and that's why the breath work works basically is, you know, it's accessing all of those earlier messaging that
When we sat down to do the breath work, the facilitators were saying, listen, some people are going to laugh, some people are going to cry, some people are going to, and I'm like, and not being resistant to it at all, but I was like, I'm not going to cry. Denise, I woke up an hour later and my face was soaking wet. And it wasn't like an emotional release, but like, it was just like tears everywhere. That was like, it was so crazy. It was just, I'd never kind of experienced like emotionless tears, but it was definitely some kind of like major release that was going on.
So were you having like conscious memories at the time as well, or was just like a physical release?
I think a lot of the, yes, everything, you know, I think we did it for an hour. The other thing about like breath work is like, there's no time, right? Like we could have been there for 10 hours and, you know, you just don't register time when you're, it's almost hypnotic, you know?
Yeah,
it
sounds like you're in a very deep meditative state.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was amazing, you know? Highly, highly recommend anyone to at least try breath work, but you got to let go. So if you're not ready to let go.
Workshop? Like, where did you do it? That sounds cool.
So, yeah. So do you know Elizabeth Fay? She does the Hair Love Retreat.
Okay.
So it's the Hair Love Retreat. So we've been honored enough to be invited twice to Hair Love Retreat, and she does breath work in her practice, and she shares her breath work with her. She certifies some breath work instructors. I want to do that. It's one of those things, like I want to like be a breath work instructor, but I don't know if I'd ever do anything with it. But I just kind of want to do it to know it. I don't even know why. You know what I mean?
This is cool and it works.
Yes, because and I've only done it a couple of times, you know, it's like, I haven't done this a thousand, you know, I don't have my 1,000 hours in the air with it, but just how impactful it was, just the couple hours or the few hours that I've put into it. It's so game changing. Not that I want to make this all about breath work, but it was just so impactful for me.
Oh, I think that's awesome. Did you do it too, Tony?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I had the same experience. I mean, I didn't cry. I laughed, but it was like that little kid laugh. Like, you know, I was able to reconnect with that little guy, and it was incredible. It really was.
I'm going to be honest. I think I might be lying. I'm going to be honest, but I might actually be lying. But I think a lot of my story changing for my dad happened during that breath work.
Well, so that's what I was wondering. Were you like consciously thinking about it, or it was just a release?
I think when you do really, really strong inner child work, you can't help but empathize with everybody's inner child.
Yeah.
Whether that's your parent, whether that's your spouse, whether that's your kid. Now, usually when it's our kid, we have our ego connected to their inner child, right? Because we take some kind of responsibility on how they were raised, for good or for bad or for whatever. And those are actually more difficult for me than my parents' inner child, if that makes any sense at all. I don't know.
Whatever. Right.
This is a bit like therapy here.
Right, yeah.
It's getting deep over here.
But
yeah,
that's
awesome. Denise, how can people get a hold of you? How can they find you? How can they find out what programs you're doing and all that? Give us the goods.
Yeah, so I named the program Under the Cut. So what's going on underneath that haircut? But anyway, it's funny because I figured people will pay for their hair before they'll pay for therapy. They'll pay for what they can see, but they don't want to pay for what they can't see. It's very interesting. But regardless, you don't see like fast real-time results. But so it's called Under the Cut. So I'm on Instagram. I would love it if people would follow me because I'm just in the infancy of building this, actually. It's under.the.cut on Instagram. And my website is underthecut.org. I do have a class coming up April 15th. It's a virtual training. Awesome. I believe it's Boundaries 101 is what we'll be teaching. And that's where we'll go into learning about not only what a boundary is, but how to instill one and why it might be hard for you. And then looking at those whys, really, so that you can kind of work through that so that you can start putting up some boundaries. We don't just talk about, you know, getting your nails done and getting a massage. We go a lot deeper into what I think my definition of a boundary really is. So that's kind of what I'm doing. And
Denise, where is that class?
It'll be virtual. So I do virtual trainings. I do in-person trainings. I'll be doing, going to Montreal soon to do training. I think maybe, anyway, so I, you know, salons can use me to do an in-person all-day training, half-day training. They can do a virtual training. And it's also available on L'Oreal level program. People can actually use their points to purchase the course for the digital, for the virtual courses. Eventually, it will be a digital download course as well. So it's a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm just like so excited. It's just taken... I started writing this actually in about 2016. So it's a pretty big curriculum and it's pretty rich. It's tiring, which is we actually had to reduce the time of it because it was just too kind of emotionally taxing. Obviously I'm not going deep into therapy because, that would be outside of the scope of that practice. But we're getting you to guide to just kind of scratch the surface so you can start going on, you know, kind of your journey in your life to make your business the best it can be, really.
That's amazing. Yeah, thank you so much for grabbing this bull by its horns, because it's definitely needed. It's just needed in the industry, not even in the industry. I think it's just needed in society. And bravo for attacking this, and bravo for putting something together for our community. We applaud you and we thank you for that. And Miss Denise Marshall, thank you very, very much.
Happy I met you both.
Oh, absolutely.
So to speak.
Same. And thank you for joining us on your day off.
Thanks. Have a great day.
If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, share it with friends, give us a rating, and drop a review. To listen to all the latest podcasts, please subscribe from your favorite podcast outlet. And to stay connected on and off the show, you can follow us at Hairdistry on Instagram and all other social media platforms. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Peace and love.